versus Illinois, Mr. Hurd.
May it please the court, my name is David Hurd and I'm counsel to Daiwa Special Asset Court. The issue in this appeal is whether Daiwa or the state of Illinois has a superior interest in the Medicaid reimbursement payments that the state owes to Doctors Hospital. Daiwa has a perfected security interest and gave the state notice of its right as an assignee in 1997. The state is seeking not to offset Medicaid overpayments, but unpaid tax payments. If the UCC were the only statute that applied to this dispute, it would be clear that Daiwa would prevail. And we believe that there should be no difference by virtue of the fact that there is the 1873 Comptroller Act.
It would be weird to have the UCC wiping out specific statutes that are not concerned with commercial law as such, with tax collection. I've never heard of that.
Well, I think the UCC...
How many states have this kind of statute? Must be common.
I am not on a search on that. The state of Kansas had a statute that was similar to this, and the Kansas Supreme Court held that the UCC prevailed.
The problem with your position is that if you won, there'd be a big flurry of amendments to UCC.
I don't necessarily
think to give up its right to get taxes.
Well, I'm not so sure that the state would do that. That's clearly something that would be for the state legislature to decide. What we're dealing with now is the law as it is right now. And the law in the UCC makes no distinction between the state and other types of parties.
Your argument about the 1873-ness of this statute, it's not an antique. It's reenacted and it's current.
But it's
not something people just forgot about when the UCC was passed.
It may be that there was not a consideration of the relationship between the two, but there clearly is a relationship, and there clearly is an intent on the part of the drafters of the UCC to put governments in the same status as private parties. The definitions of an account debtor, which is the position that the state is in, includes government units. And we believe
it's
that
the UCC was intended to wipe out a bunch of state laws that didn't deal with. I mean, the UCC supplanted the Uniform Sales Act and, you know, common law of sales and so on, but the draftsmen of the UCC didn't have any intentions with regard to statutes like this, I don't think.
I would disagree with Your Honor because I would look at subsection 4 of...
Do you have evidence in the legislative history of the UCC that they thought about these things?
I have the evidence from the official comments that was intended to wipe out anti-assignment statutes. And this state law is an anti-assignment statute. It begins by saying no assignment shall be effective to undermine the state's right of set-off. That, to me, is clearly an anti-assignment statute.
Did you represent Daiwa when it made this, when it bought this paper?
I did not represent Daiwa in the commercial transaction.
Well, your
firm? My firm did not. The Kay Scholer firm did, which is co-counsel on the brief.
If you were advising a Daiwa type of company about purchase of paper, wouldn't you want to look see whether there was a state statute dealing with...
I imagine they would.
Excuse me?
I imagine one would, and but I don't know whether it was done or not, since that wasn't involved.
You don't... I can't hear you.
I'm sorry. I imagine one would.
Well, Kay Scholer apparently didn't.
I don't know whether they did or didn't.
Well, as far as they were concerned, the financing statements were filed and notified, and the government was notified.
Correct. And this was a program that was in use throughout the country, so that if one were following the UCC generally around throughout the country, one would be able to rely on having taken the steps to perfect the security interest and to give notice of the assignment to the account debtor. And as I point out, in the state of Kansas, that's where the Supreme Court has gone and said that the state's right is inferior to the right of the secured creditor or signee that has given notice.
You cite that case, I guess.
Yes, it's the state of Kansas. It's Bank of Kansas versus Hutchinson Healthcare Services, and it's discussed in both the opening and the reply brief. And we believe we think that's a very important case because the whole concept of the UCC is uniformity. And we believe that uniformity among states is a key concept. Also, we believe uniformity among parties. Right now, a lender, based on the district court's decision here and the Supreme Court in Kansas decision, would realize that it would have a superior position if it's lending to healthcare institutions in Kansas than it would in Illinois. Moreover, even though Kansas and Illinois law are very much the same, we believe that the statutes are virtually identical in the UCC. There's a difference of interpretation because of the existence of this Comptroller Act. I would also note that in the 2001 amendments to the UCC, there's a clarification that was made to distinguish between subsection A and sub B of what was formerly 9-318, but now section 404, to make clear that subsection A dealt only with claims in the nature of recoupment. This is what we believe is the way that the current version of the UCC should be read, and this was confirmed, we believe, by the changes in the 2001 version.
Well, your argument there is all right, but I think the real difficulty is you've got a state statute directed to a very specific issue about tax collection, and here's the UCC, which is an extremely general commercial code, and it just seems odd as a matter of statutory interpretation that one would think the UCC had, kind of with the back of its hand, wiped out all these specialized statutes.
Well, Your Honor, first of all, the state statute is not limited to tax collection. It, by its term, refers to any claim whatsoever. We happen to have tax claims at issue in this case.
Well, that's, of course, the principal claim the states have.
But we believe that this has to do with the structure of the relationship between an account debtor, an assignor, and an assignee. And there's the UCC clearly comes up with a provision that gives the structure.
When you or Kay Scholer are advising clients who are financing state activities, financing state debt, you know that there are special rules for governments. Governments are constantly carving special deals for themselves. So if you looked around and found this statute, then you're on notice. And
I don't think anyone's arguing that we shouldn't be, that the debtor, that the guy should not have been on notice of the statute. We're simply arguing that the statute is ineffective because it is inconsistent with the UCC and changes the uniform nature of the treatment among in this tripartite relationship.
Is that it?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Hurd. Mr. Bauer?
May it please the Court, Brian Barrow, Assistant Attorney General, on behalf of the State of Illinois. This case really just boils down to the application of a couple of very fundamental principles of law. Contracts must be construed in light of existing law and statutes in effect at the time a contract is made, become part of the contract. And that also, an assignee, in this case Daiwa, stands in the shoes of the assignor, Doctors Hospital, and obtains only those rights that the assignor had. There's no question that when Doctors Hospital entered into the Medicaid contract, it did so subject to the offset provisions of the Comptroller's Act and the private and its priority provisions, just as anyone that enters into a contract with the state would know. The Comptroller, of course, is the agency that pays the warrants of these Medicaid warrants. The Comptroller is the agency that would set off tax claims with any individual entering into a contract with it. Daiwa had to know, it had to be charged with the knowledge of the statute.
But Mr. Hurd says that yes, but Daiwa assumed the statute had been superseded by the UCC. That's his basic argument.
I don't think that's the case, Your Honor. I think this is, as you pointed out, this is a very specialized statute. It only applies to the state.
Has it been reenacted? Now, it was reenacted, and then there was this 2001 or 2000 amendment to the UCC, this kind of leapfrog here. They each get reenacted.
These statutes have been consistently enacted and reenacted over the last 40 or 50 years. I don't think the recent amendment to the UCC, I don't think has anything to do with this case, obviously. This is not that.
It wouldn't be applicable.
It's not applicable, right. It's not a clarification of the law. It's obviously an amendment. The language is different, and so, exactly, it wouldn't be applicable. There's simply no conflict between these respective provisions. They work the way they're supposed to work. 918, 9 through 18, 1A says a contract term is a defense that the account debtor can rely on. The provisions of the Comptroller's Act are a contract term, and it's just a very simple, plain application of the statute.
With regard to what I guess we would call implied provisions in a contract based on a state statute, is this a unique law, one of the very few, or are there a lot of state laws that when people are drawing up contracts have to do some sort of a search to see if there's some implied provision that exists? State law?
Your Honor, I don't really know the answer to that. I know a number of states have them. I don't know if it's the majority or the minority or...
Have what?
Have offset provisions such as the control.
Well, I understand the offset. What I'm saying in broader terms, is this a... Are there lots of statutes that are implied into contracts, or is this a unique provision one of a kind?
I mean, obviously, most statutes are going to be implied into the contract. I mean, obviously, it has to... at some basic level has to be related. Obviously, a dog leash, the statute requiring dog leash, you know, dogs to walk on leashes wouldn't have an application in this case.
If there's something, if it's regulating a certain industry or a certain conduct, but if you're talking about something where you just, accounts receivable, which is a very normal thing for anybody to get a secured interest to routinely get that sort of thing, a lender will always do it. So I'm just wondering if in that sort of a contract, if there are other types of contracts. In other words, is this a general provision in the law, or is this unique to this statute?
I think it's a general. I mean, that's a general rule of law that you imply state statutes into, that you apply statutes into a contract. Now, if I'm getting at your question correctly, when you do business,
they're usually
with the state,
those statutes that regulate the contract. Right.
Correct. To some extent. I mean, when you're doing business with the state, I mean, every industry has its unique features to it. If you're doing business with a trucking company, there's going to be different features to your contract. And if you're doing business with a hospital, there's different features. And if you're doing business with the state, there's going to be different features. And there's going to be different laws that apply to those contracts. And generally, there are special rules that are involved when you're dealing with the state. And I think you have to, anybody who contracts with the state has to understand that and does understand that, I believe, whether you're a student entering into a student loan contract or you're a hospital entering into a Medicaid contract, that these offset provisions are going to apply to you. And I think most people entering into contracts with the state understand that.
So you're saying Daiwa, by taking this assignment, became a contract party with the state?
I don't know if they became a contract party with the state. I don't know if I could go that far, but certainly under the plain language of the UCC, their rights are subordinate to the rights of the state. And that's...
Oh, right, right. They don't have a contract.
They don't necessarily have a contract.
That would be the recoupment part.
Right.
$1,700 or something.
I believe so, which is not an issue. So, this is not an anti-assignment art. The reading the Comptroller's Act into the UCC does not create an anti-assignment provision because under that argument, any express contract term would also be an anti-assignment provision. I mean, the 3118.1H specifically says contract terms, defenses based on contract terms, are good against the assignee. So that argument can't work. And the Kansas case that they rely on, just to distinguish it briefly, there was not a comparable statute there. It was a somewhat different provision. It was not a mandatory offset. And frankly, the most important thing is no one really raised the issue in that case as whether this was a 3181A contract defense or a 3181B non-contract defense. They just sort of assumed it was a 1B non-contract defense. And the case that the Kansas case relied on, which was the Central State Bank case from New York, it really did the same thing. In the Central State case bank, I don't know if there was a statutory offset. I think it was a common law. It looks like it was a common law. The court doesn't really explain it. So I don't think the Kansas case can really stand for the proposition that the Comptroller's Act is not a contract term. If the court has no other questions, I would just ask that the district court decision.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Barra. Mr. Hurd, how much time does he have? 6 minutes? Wow.
I'd like to just address a couple of questions that the court had. First of all, there was questions about the reenactment history of the UCC and the Comptroller Act. Although the UCC was recently reenacted in 2001, it was also reenacted in 1972, which was after the last time the Comptroller Act was enacted. Secondly,
do any of these reenactments allude to these?
No, they did not. And these last set of reenactments of both statutes was very close in time.
There is this canon of construction, maybe a little threadbare, that repeals by implication are disfavored. And isn't that what you're arguing, that this Comptroller statute got wiped out by the UCC, even though the UCC didn't say anything about it?
That's one of our arguments, and that was an argument that the bankruptcy court relied upon. Our other argument.
I thought it the other way. I don't understand.
Pardon?
I thought it went the other way.
The other arguments that I
would... Wait, I don't understand you. Repeals by the canon against repeals by implication is against you, not for you. It says that the UCC shouldn't be assumed to have wiped out this Comptroller statute when it doesn't mention it. And
oh, I'm sorry. I forgive myself. Me, Your Honor, I misunderstood your question. Our argument is that even though the statute did not mention the Comptroller Act, it clearly dealt universally with the situation of the relationship of account debtor and assignee and assignor, and clearly indicated that account debtors would include governments, the state being a government. It would have been a very simple matter to say governments but not the state.
Well, it's not really a simple matter because there's this enormous pressure to have the UCC adopted in every state. And, you know, there's this principle that when you interpret the UCC, you're supposed to look at interpretations by other states. There's this overriding goal of uniformity. And it would be impaired. I mean, there's a sense in which you're arguing for uniformity, but there's also a sense in which uniformity would be impaired if the UCC had to be amended every time it came into collision with some specialized state statute. Mm-hmm.
Well, I would think that would be appropriate for uniformity because otherwise you have sleeper inconsistencies, which is what we have here. Had this been taken into account, it would have been very clear in the last set of amendments, whether it was very clear to a lender like Daiwa, that the UCC would not have trumped the Comptroller Act because it's not taken
but
into account.
But the fairest rule would be to say UCC doesn't trump, it's a matter of interpretation, there's no need for amendments to UCC, and your type of client should just, you know, when they're doing their due diligence search or whatever, they should be aware of the fact that state statutes giving particular rights to particular creditors are binding.
But the whole purpose of the UCC is to overrule existing statutes that give special rights to the creditors.
No, no, the purpose of the UCC was to plant the Sales Act, the Uniform Sales Act and the Common Law of Sales. It wasn't supposed to do anything about state priorities in taxation or priorities in bankruptcy or anything like that.
Well, I think it was also intended, Your Honor, to deal with the structure in place dealing with the secure transactions, which is the title that we're dealing with, Title IX. And prior to the adoption of the UCC, there was a myriad of different types of secure transactions arrangements all around the country. Even within particular states, there's different arrangements.
There's nothing in the history of the UCC to suggest that this type of statute was what they were worried about.
I think you could say that that they were interested generally in all such statutes, and this is a particular one. It happens to favor the state, but it is a special rule.
You know, insolvency law, right?
I'm sorry.
It's like saying that UCC wiped out existing law on insolvency on priorities of creditors, all of which is very important to your clients.
Well, first of all, federal insolvency law is superior to that in the bankruptcy code, but with respect to the UCC,
state insolvency proceedings.
But with respect to state insolvency proceedings, they would look to the UCC to look at the relative rights of creditors.
They'd look at state law of insolvency. They wouldn't assume it had been swept away by the UCC.
But the state law of insolvency would incorporate the UCC just as the bankruptcy code allows secured creditors their rights under the UCC. We are here in a case in bankruptcy court under Section 553, the set-off provision, but that looks to the UCC. Similarly, state insolvency law would look to the UCC to look at the relative rights of secured creditors, assignees, assignors, and the account debtor. And here what we have is a statute that plays havoc with that. You go, the rules will not be the same from state to state, even though the language of the UCC will read the same in state to state. My adversary attempts to distinguish the Kansas case. We think it's right on point, and it clearly deals with the analogous situation. And quite frankly, the rule will be different in Kansas and in Illinois on the fact that there is a statute existing here that is not referred to in the UCC. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Hurd and Mr. Barrow. Okay, the court is going to take a very brief recess. Be right back.